The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6th, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
That was one of the most demagogic presentations I've ever seen in a high-profile criminal case. Anyone who listened to that, any normal person reacting to that, would assume that Trump was alleged to have carried out the Capitol riot. The entire presentation that he made was not about what the core charges in his case are. It was about the Capitol riot and the security personnel who were injured in the Capitol riot and who had to fight to defend the Capitol riot. And then you turn to his indictment. He's not charged with the Capitol riot.
But the most jarring thing about this indictment is that it basically just accuses him of disinformation. This is a disinformation indictment. It says that you were spreading falsehoods, that you were undermining the integrity of the election. That's all part of the First Amendment, and I think the courts will look skeptically. He might have a fair shot with a D.C. jury and maybe a D.C. judge. He's going to have a harder time with the courts. And this reminds me of sort of the McDowell complaint, where he took the Virginia governor, got a conviction, and then it was unanimously overturned by the Supreme Court. It is a bridge too far.
Corruption and bribery allegations swirling around the president of the United States. That's Joe Biden. So naturally, Biden's now weaponized, politicized DOJ, has just indicted his chief political rival. That is Donald Trump. Yet again, this is an incredibly weak, baseless, convoluted indictment. It is bizarrely centered around what is clearly protected speech, zero criminal statutes, because there are none that were applicable that are actually written into law. It is based on an obscure law from the Civil War.
The last time Jack Smith charged a politician, the case was so weak it got tossed out of the Supreme Court unanimously. Biden's Justice Department is using obscure federal statutes to put a former president in prison for the rest of his life. These charges aren't bribery, not assault, not tax evasion, not sex trafficking. They're charging Trump under the Act of 1866. It was used against the Klan, and now they're using it against Trump.
This indictment is a game changer. It's the first time that we've taken political speech and said we're going to criminalize it by the party that's in control against the party that's contesting the next election, where the two individuals involved are going to be running for office. That is an incredible set of circumstances.
Yet another indictment, and of course, as many predicted, perfectly timed. To just bump all the Biden crime family crimes off the front pages, to the extent that they were even covering it the other day when Devin Archer blew the whistle. He was an insider. He was right there with Hunter saying, Joe Biden, that was Hunter's guy. He was on the speakerphone at least 20 times where I was present. All of these associates, these business associates, the bribery schemes, The prostitution rings, the crack cocaine. No, he's not charged for that. So what do we have if you're keeping score, you've got the bookkeeping charge, you've got the moving boxes charge, and now you've got the thought crime. He actually thought the election was stolen. Or maybe it's not that. He knew it wasn't stolen, but then he went out there and lied to the American people and said that it was. So for that, he needs to go to prison, I guess, for another 50, 60 years. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this show at our website, TrumpetDaily.com. Just go to TrumpetDaily.com. You can see the live stream every weekday morning at 11 a.m. in the central time zone of these United States. You can also see it at the Rumble channel. Just go to the Trumpet Daily over at Rumble, and you can watch the live stream. Of course, you can watch the show after the fact at both of those websites as well. I should also tell you about the successful launch of this program on Live from America TV. That's a Rumble channel as well, LFA TV, it's often called. Our time slot last night, 9 p.m. Eastern and 8 p.m. Central. Got quite a few views and comments and so on. So again, if you'd prefer to watch it over at LFA, you can tune in at about 8 o'clock Central Time Zone of the United States. You just get the program a little bit later than you do if you tune in with our live, our growing live audience. So where to begin? As Jesse pointed out there, this is not bribery. You know, receiving $10 million and then the pay-to-play, withholding $1 billion in return, the big guy withholding $1 billion from Ukraine until they fired Shokin, and then all the prostitution rings, all the drug addiction, captured on video. It's none of that. It's moving boxes, and now the thought crimes. I guess I don't even need to read it. Maybe I could. This is from page 7 of the indictment. It's talking about, the great thing about this, by the way, is it's bringing the election fraud argument back to the forefront. And Smith may have made a pretty big mistake. We'll get to that in just a moment. But he's talking about what Trump was out there lying about with respect to election fraud. And Smith says, these claims were false, and the defendant knew that they were false. See, they can divine the crime. Not only were his claims about election fraud false, Donald Trump's, but Donald Trump knew that they were false. And you know how Jack Smith knows that Donald Trump knew? Well, because a lot of people told Donald Trump that he lost. Fair and square. Chris Krebs, he's referenced in this. He said it was the most perfect election in history. So Donald Trump had to have known. These claims were false, and the defendant knew that they were false. In fact, the defendant was notified repeatedly that his claims were untrue. He was notified. Can you believe it? They know some, even some people right around Donald Trump, they notified him. And yet he still went out there and he lied to the American people. So where, by the way, you heard that in the opening montage. But what about January 6 here? I mean, we've been told for 2.5 years this was an attempt to bring down the U.S. government, an insurrection. Okay, well, if it was a planned insurrection, then who led it? It would be Donald Trump. And how deceitful it is. This is because Jack Smith knows he doesn't have the goods. So he comes out with his big press conference yesterday. He talks about January 6th and the attack on the Capitol. And then you read through the indictment. There's nothing there. There's nothing there about the so-called insurrection. And of course, you know why. Smith may have made a huge blunder as it is, but they're not going into January 6th because, again, you put the indictment out there, then you open yourself up to discovery. You open yourself up to subpoena power from the other side. And then the FBI is going to have to turn, if it's based on the January 6th insurrection, well, Donald Trump's team is going to want to know all about the number of FBI agents that were in the mix that day, leading the way in some cases. Not unlike Ray Epps. Let's go in. Did Donald Trump ever say go inside the Capitol? Never did. So for 2.5 years, it's just been on an endless loop with the regime media. Insurrection, the worst day in history. Certainly, it's right up there with Pearl Harbor. It's up there with the Civil War, even. This is what we've been told. This is what the droids in the media have been saying over and over and over again. And then Jack Smith gets up there yesterday and he frames it as if the whole indictment revolves around the so-called insurrection. And it doesn't. It's basically Donald Trump is guilty for spreading misinformation. They're going to try to throw him in prison over thought crimes or over what he said. Free speech, all of it's protected, as Hannity, I think, said there in that opening. It's protected by the First Amendment. I mean, these people, they're just shredding the Constitution at every stop, any way that they can. This is from the indictment as well. These claims were false, and the defendant knew that they were false, but the defendant repeated and widely disseminated them anyway to create an intense national atmosphere of mistrust and anger. So Donald Trump is guilty of creating that atmosphere of mistrust. He was taking that, you know, the other thing that's just kind of underlying in all of this is how sensitive are they to those charges that they stole it? You read through this indictment and you come away from it thinking, well, looking at how defensive they are, maybe they did steal it. Maybe they did steal it. The beauty of this, though, is now finally, there's going to be some courts. Now, the first one at the D.C. level, and you look at the Obama-appointed judge and the way she's gone after January 6 protesters, they'll probably get the guilty verdict in round one. But you have to step back and look at the bigger picture here. What will Trump's team receive in return once they start using their subpoena power? Even about the election. Look, if you're saying that Donald Trump was out there spreading these lies and you're on offense, you're bringing the indictment before the courts, then if he was spreading lies and it was creating this kind of atmosphere, well, then you've got to prove that they're lies. You've got to bring forward evidence showing that what they did in Georgia, what they did in Pennsylvania, what they did in Maricopa County, it was all above board. There was no cheating. There was nothing inappropriate going on there. Trump has the right to criticize the election, the process, whatever. And for those that said he was trying to take over the government, overturn the government, he wouldn't leave peacefully. He absolutely left peacefully. And then, too, just thinking about what the feds created on January 6th and the whole process that was about to play out there. Ted Cruz, Josh Hawley, they were all coming in with, they were prepared to analyze the evidence of election fraud. And it's happened so many times before, mostly from Democrats, as I'll get to in just a second. But a lot of times the Democrats could never get a senator to side with them, the Democrats in Congress, or the House, I should say. But in this case, there were lots of senators that were going to speak up, and Mike Pence was going to hear their presentations. All of that just got lost in the mayhem. All of that got lost in the news coverage on that day, and it was all by design. The media didn't want, the regime media and the Democrats, they didn't want to see, you know, evidence actually being argued live on C-SPAN. This is from the Federalist. It says, on Tuesday, President Joe Biden's Justice Department took the unprecedented step of indicting former President Trump, Biden's chief rival in the upcoming election, for repeatedly expressing his opinion that the last election was stolen, rigged, and unfair. I mean, you read it and you just think, is this actually happening in the United States of America? He's being indicted for repeatedly expressing his opinion that the last election was stolen, rigged, and unfair? Well, that happens to be my opinion. That happens to be the opinion of tens of millions of Americans. It goes to what Trump has always said. Look, they're coming after me, but they don't want me. They want you. These are the intimidation tactics that we've come to know well from these communists. They want to intimidate you into silence, into submission. They want to blot out even the name of Israel, as it says in 2 Kings 14. So they're just basically coming forward saying, look, no matter how much we ballot harvest, no matter how much we have mules running in votes, no matter how many times the machine, if there's glitches in the machines, no matter how many times we close down the counting stations and then resume it 2, 3, 4 days later, no matter how late the ballots can come in, If a Democrat wins, you are not to contest it. You are to accept it. The Democrats are quite good at contesting it themselves. Are we supposed to go back to 2016? If it were a fair system of justice, well, you'd have an indictment for Hillary Clinton. She still doesn't believe she lost fair and square. I mean, she's contributing to this atmosphere of mistrust. Guilty of the same thought crimes. Says here, it's an opinion millions of Americans share that the election was rigged and stolen, and to which they are unquestionably entitled, thanks to the First Amendment. That includes Trump, who has said repeatedly and recently that the 2020 election was stolen. He'll probably keep saying it until his dying day, and he has every right to do so. He has every right to do so. His speech is protected by the First Amendment. It says here, the idea that our Justice Department can indict someone, especially the sitting president's main political rival, over speech that's protected by the First Amendment is simply insane. It's just insane what's happening here. And I should say, again, perfectly timed, the day after, you see, the day after they were all busy trying to downplay the Devin Archer revelations, trying to say there's nothing really there. There's no real evidence there. You heard the montages we played earlier this week. Then they come out and say, oh, the bombshell. They got Trump again. Indictment number three. Number four will be coming from Georgia anytime now. Four indictments aimed at his chief political rival. And we're not going to even call it Biden's DOJ. It's Barack Hussein Obama's DOJ. Obama's the one who weaponized the DOJ, the FBI. And he's using it now to interfere in the next election cycle, as President Trump is rightly pointing out. It says here, it puts us firmly into banana republic territory where tin-pot dictators jail their political opponents ahead of election day to ensure their reelection, quote unquote. Simply put, this indictment is nothing more than a declaration of war against American voters and their constitutional right to free speech. It's a declaration of war. What does this trumpet cover say? This is from January, earlier this year. Ready for war. 2 Kings 14. I mean, it says there that the Jeroboam type, he's got a war to recover what's rightly his. I think it's really interesting that now all of a sudden we get to finally go back and look at the election of 2020. Jack Smith says that Trump was out there creating this atmosphere of mistrust. All right, well then let's look into it and find out who was lying. Was it Donald Trump or was it, let's say, Brad Raffensperger down in Georgia? Which one of them was telling the truth? Which one of them was lying? It says here, if you take a red pen, it's quoting Jonathan Turley, if you take a red pen to all the material presumptively protected by the First Amendment, you can reduce much of this indictment to haiku. Listen, that's Turley. Listen to Andy McCarthy and what he said about the indictment, clip 11.
So I think what you have is the case comes down to, can he prove that Trump believed the things that he was saying, notwithstanding all the evidence to the contrary. But even if he could get over that hurdle, which I think is daunting, I do think that you have the problem that he has extravagantly stretched these statutes in order to try to capture this behavior. And that's because this is really a proxy for what should have been a political impeachment process. They're leaving to the criminal justice system the failure of Congress to carry out a successful impeachment.
That's McCarthy, the one in the opening montage that said, I'm just kind of stunned by Jack Smith's statement. It's just propaganda. Propaganda. Alan Dershowitz, he said this, I believe, at Fox as well, number 12.
In the indictment, they acknowledge that there are these freedoms, but then they claim that Donald, and this is the key point, that Donald Trump actually believed that he lost the election, that everything he did was fraudulent, that he conspired with unnamed lawyers, mostly, to affect the election. Now, you're allowed to challenge elections. Indeed, the best way to challenge elections is to come up with a slate of alternate electors. That's what a court said in Hawaii in 1960. That's been the case throughout our history. So the government has the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that subjectively Donald Trump actually believed that he lost the election and acted contrary to that belief. Now, I've read the indictment very carefully. There is no smoking gun. There is no one who is credibly prepared to testify that Donald Trump said to him, "I know personally I lost the election." There's a lot of evidence that people told him he lost the election, but you know Donald Trump, and you know that he's going to make up his own mind, and they're going to have a very hard time proving it.
I think it was Greg Jarrett who said that Jack Smith should be indicted for his stupidity. I mean, he had one, as you heard in the opener. He had a case that made its way up to the Supreme Court, and all nine of them voted it down, voted against Jack Smith. He's that radical. This is not your everyday attorney. This is a radical leftist hack. He's a propagandist. He's a writer of fiction, for sure. He's one of the attack dogs that Obama has unleashed on his chief political rival. This is from Greg Jarrett at Fox yesterday as well, number 13.
You know, these four counts are the definition of a stretch. It's a Gumby indictment. Conspiracy to defraud the government because Trump challenged certification of electors on January 6th. Well, he's entitled to do that under the Electoral Count Act. Democrats did the same thing in 2016 and in prior elections. Nor is it a crime to claim the election was stolen, which Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi alleged 4 years earlier. And the main point is, if Donald Trump truly believed he won, even if he was wrong about it, and he used the legal process to contest the outcome as the law clearly permits, that is not election fraud.
What's funny to me is that Fox News is now having to talk about election fraud. They wanted to drop that like a bad habit. They wanted to move on. They wanted Trump to shut up. They wanted Giuliani and all of them to shut up. By the way, all these co-conspirators, you see them listed off in this indictment. I think four of them are lawyers. So try to wrap your mind, or let's just play along with Jack Smith. Yeah, he was there in transition. He was talking to his lawyers. He was looking for ways that he could contest the election. He believed it was rigged and stolen. He created an atmosphere of mistrust. So there's that together with moving boxes and the bookkeeping error. If it was even an error, it wasn't. That's what they're getting Trump on. These people are, it's like some of them are demon possessed for sure. Just obsessed. The derangement. TDS, I mean, it is real. Trump derangement syndrome. And all perfectly timed by Obama's DOJ. Just perfect timing. You may have seen a tweet that went out showing that how when the heat is finally turned up on the Biden crime family, well, then you can be sure that the very next day there's going to be an indictment on Trump, or there's going to be an expansion of an indictment. Or in this case now, another indictment. Listen to Jesse Waters from last night, clip 4.
Now, the timing of this indictment was coordinated to take the heat off Biden. This is the third time this has happened. You ready? On March 17th, Hunter admitted the laptop was his. And on the very next day, Trump received word Alvin Bragg was indicting him in New York. On June 8th, an FBI document broke that Ukraine paid Biden a $5 million bribe. And the next day, on June 9th, Biden's DOJ indicts Trump on the Mar-a-Lago documents. Yesterday, on July 31st, a Biden insider told Congress that Biden spoke with Hunter Biden's business partners dozens of times, and Hunter was paid handsomely to get his dad to fire the prosecutor in Ukraine. And then today, August 1st, Biden's Justice Department indicts Trump on January 6th charges. This isn't a coincidence. Anytime Biden's in trouble, Trump pays for it. And the news cycle flips.
Ukraine paid Biden, Joe Biden, a $5 million bribe. and Donald Trump had a discussion with his lawyers about election fraud and how to fight it, how to battle it. And nothing much came of it because Mike Pence wouldn't allow for the evidence to be debated there in Congress. It was too dangerous. Insurrection. Just shut it down, put the stamp of certify everything, move it out. And the, of course, all the courts that just wouldn't look at evidence, they'd refuse it on standing or for whatever reason. Now you've got Fox News talking about election fraud, and now you've got this indictment talking about election fraud that's going to be working its way through the courts. But again, Jesse's right. He's exactly right about the timing. Anytime the heat is turned up on the Bidens, this is what happens. This is how Obama's DOJ reacts. They spring to action. You've got to give them credit. They continually put you on your heels. They make you play defense. This is from Sundance. Someone needs to send him America Under Attack if he doesn't have it already. I didn't give you the 800 number, but that magazine, the Trumpet magazine, you can subscribe to that, or you can request America Under Attack, the literature we offer. There's no cost, no obligation. The 800 number is 1-866-930-3024. America Under Attack and Ready for War, at least the January issue had that as its headline. Sundance writes, until the era of Barack Obama and Eric Holder, the efforts of the community activists were to excuse and absolve the transparently guilty. That was the objective. That was the goal. Just cover up the sins of the guilty on their side. It was only when Barack Obama and Eric Holder moved into office that things changed. The inflection point was achieved. What we now consider the weaponization of the DOJ is actually the outcome of main justice merging with community activism. Instead of the long-standing method of absolving the transparently guilty, the justice system was repurposed to accuse the transparently innocent. I think he might have even posted this before we learned of Jack Smith's indictment. By the way, I was laying on the couch at the end of the day, and probably for the first time in years, I turned on CNN. I was there dozing a little bit, watching CNN, and they were anticipating the release of this indictment, and they kept saying, now, we don't know if it could be tonight. We don't know if it could be 5 p.m., 6 p.m., but they were so excited. I was just sitting there going, they know it's about to come. They know it's about to be released. They're so giddy. They're so enthusiastic. They're so excited. And then, of course, as soon as it hits, they're there to tell you that this is very serious, very serious. And they bring in all the panels and so on and tell you that Jack, I mean, he's got the goods this time. Well, if they're an honest commentator, like a few that I've shown you here today, you see how much of a sham this is. It says, what we now consider the weaponization, I read that, it says, in the early stages of 2009 to 2012, the media were probed and prodded, tested to identify their willful alignment and train them to assist. See, they need the deep state. I mean, it's got to have the regime media to facilitate a lot of this. It says, in essence, the goal was to bring the corporate media into the new shifted dynamic of targeting. The media no longer needed to justify the actions of the transparently guilty offenders. The new goal was to frame the transparently innocent with accusations that advance the interests of the regime. And we've seen this going on, blatantly so, for 7 years. Framing the innocent. The transparently innocent. It says here, people have noted the shift and realignment in Democrats. This is all connected to the same shifted dynamic. The activists gain control of the levers of power. The force of government now shifted the media narrative from bad behavior targeting the guilty, targeting the guilty the activists supported, to good behavior targeting the behavior of innocence the activists do not support. It says, finally, just one last statement, while this media effort was taking place, Attorney General Eric Holder was transforming the DOJ into an ideological targeting enterprise. And so now it's not that they don't cover up. They still cover up. That's what this indictment's meant to do, to cover up for Biden, because they know the heat is on. But then at the same time, they're framing the innocent, framing a president, a former president, for thought crimes, for having discussions with his lawyers, his attorneys. Somehow those discussions that Trump has with his attorneys, there's never any attorney-client privilege to protect those discussions. But look at what he did. He was anxiously waiting for Congress to act on January 6th. He knew that this was his last opportunity to address the election fraud. And Ted Cruz and Hawley and company, they were going in prepared to look at the evidence, prepared to argue the evidence, to argue in favor of Donald Trump. So this is why Trump at the Ellipse, he's given the speech. He says, I want you to go down there. I want you to be peaceful. I don't want you to go into the Capitol, but I want you to help give courage to these congressmen and women, because there's a lot of pressure against them. There's a lot of intimidation going on. They're trying to intimidate them into silence. Show them by your numbers that you approve of them taking their stand. The last person on earth who had an interest in random acts of violence that day in and outside the Capitol would be Donald Trump. He wanted it to be peaceful so that the Congress people could do their jobs. They didn't do it. How rich of Mike Pence to just come out quickly with his statement yesterday, saying that anyone with this kind of an indictment, I mean, yeah, they don't belong to be the president. They don't belong in the White House. Pence, for his part, go back and play what Vice President, this is what he said on January 4th, 2021. So this is two days before the protest on January 6th, clip 8.
You know, I know we all got our doubts about the last election. And I want to assure you, I share the concerns of millions of Americans about voting irregularities. And I promise you, come this Wednesday, we'll have our day in Congress. We'll hear the objections. We'll hear the evidence.
They never did hear it. He shares the concern of millions, he said there. 2 days before the so-called insurrection. I promise you, on January 6th, it'll finally get a hearing. We'll look at this. As president of the Senate, I'm presiding over this. He never did it. And they used the protest gone awry. They used that as an excuse, a convenient cover. Well, we can't look at the evidence of election fraud, because look at what any discussion of election fraud leads to. It leads to insurrections, except when Democrats do it. That's fine. And boy, have they done it. They've done it a lot. I got ahead of myself. Let me just play this from Clay Travis. This was on Fox yesterday, clip 9.
What I can't get past is they are trying to criminalize a legal theory in this indictment. And let me explain exactly what I mean. When you look, I was doing research on this. In December of 2022, they went and they changed the law as it pertains to the Electoral Count Act. It was an 1887 law that was amended. There were legal advisors to Donald Trump who said they believed that Mike Pence had the ability to impact the way that we were receiving these electoral votes. If there wasn't discrepancy and uncertainty in the law, why did they change the law to clarify what the vice president's role was in December of 2022?
They knew, see, they knew there was a legal argument from both sides of that Electoral Act from 1887. And Trump, consulting with his attorneys, said here that, hey, Mike Pence should kick it back to the states and let the state legislatures decide. And let the state legislatures determine whether or not the rules were changed, like in Georgia, because of the mass mail-in voting. so many irregularities, and Mike Pence himself admitted he shared the same concerns. Then you get past January 6th, and people in Congress, while they still had the majority, the Democrats, they, you know, quietly changed a little bit about that law from 1887 to just make sure that it was locked down and that no vice president, or it could never be interpreted that the vice president had the authority to kick it back to the states. Why, as Clay Travis says there, why, oh, why would they do that if it was so clear when Donald Trump was contesting, if it was so clear when he was consulting with his attorneys? He's being indicted for a thought crime. They said the election was perfect, and you are simply not allowed to question that. You're not allowed to even speak about it. Listen to this stunning exchange between Caitlin Collins. Poor Caitlin Collins. She must have a pretty high opinion of herself. She's ready to go in there and take on Trump, and then she ends up looking like a fool. And here she is talking to Donald Trump's attorney. I didn't even know much about this guy. His name is John Lauro. Listen to this exchange. Lauro, going back to that transition period where he was talking about what Trump was trying to do using the legal system. The legal system. That's it. This is clip 5.
Right. What was not true? That there were states where ballots were sent out without people asking for them, where there were changes in verification, where there were instances where ballots were not being supervised at drop-off places. The president was told, given advice, that under these circumstances, the state legislatures have the ultimate ability to qualify electors. He followed that advice. Now, you may disagree as to whether or not those things actually occurred or not. That's why we have political debate. We don't have criminal trials over that. We have the discussion
but
like we're just having.
But it matters if those things actually occurred or not, John.
Not under the First
but
Amendment.
It matters if those things actually occurred because...
Not at all, because
it,
under the First Amendment...
It does matter if it was actually fraud.
No, the First Amendment allows...
But John, let me stop you there, because if he's saying that there was fraud, the First Amendment doesn't allow the President of the United States to go and claim there was fraud when he was told there was not fraud and then try to subvert the election by overturning legitimate electors.
It says it right here in the actual indictment. Absolutely. The First Amendment protects all speech. If we're going to have a situation where the Department of Justice is going to fact check politicians and indict politicians for political speech and whether or not they're factually accurate, then this country will shut down politically because it's a never-ending cycle of tit for tat. And that's the risk of injecting politics into the criminal justice system.
We need to rewind that one and play it on an endless loop, that little soundbite. Here's the quote. This is Caitlin Collins. She works at CNN. The First Amendment does not allow the president to say there was fraud when he was told there was no fraud. He was told, you see. Who told him? It doesn't matter, I guess. She knows there was no fraud. So if somebody somewhere in the inner circle of Trump's camp told him there was fraud, then he doesn't have a right to say there was fraud. That's the Jack Smith indictment, basically. That's a perfect way to summarize the 45-page indictment. The First Amendment does not allow the president to say there was fraud. It doesn't allow that. He can't say that. This is insane, as someone said. It's insane. It's not constitutional. These people, they are converted to communism. They are believers in Barack Hussein Obama's fundamental transformation of the United States. Listen again to this same attorney with Caitlin Collins, number 6.
You talk about free speech. Jack Smith noted Trump's right to free speech and to contest the election results. But what he says in this indictment is that when that did not work, the defendant, your client, pursued unlawful means of discounting legitimate votes and subverting the election results. And that is why he is being charged here, not because of anything related to free speech.
Yeah, but that's factually inaccurate, because the ultimate request that Mr. Trump made to Vice President Pence was pause the vote counting, allow the states to weigh in ultimately and audit or recertify. And under Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, the actual responsibility for qualifying electors is in the state legislatures. Mr. Trump had the advice of counsel, Mr. Eastman, who was one of the most respected constitutional scholars in the United States, giving him advice and guidance. That's pure politics. You may disagree with it, and people have spirited arguments about the law all the time, and that's why lawyers are in business. But we've never had a situation where a spirited debate about the Constitution has become a criminal case. What's going to happen when there's a Republican administration? Is there going to be an effort to criminalize speech by Democrats? Is there going to be an effort to characterize something that a Democrat politician says that's not that doesn't meet some kind of truth standard at the Department of Justice, that's going to be the subject of a criminal indictment? We've now entered a constitutional abyss as a result of this indictment.
This is an amazing piece by the Daily Signal. This, too, going back to the January 6th time period, you heard what Pence said 2 days before. This article appeared the same day, January 4th, 2021. This says here, recent precedents for challenging electoral college certifications in Congress have come not from Republican lawmakers, but from Democrats. Democrats do it all the time. What they're so offended by. What makes these people so sensitive for Republicans to call into question the validity of an election, as if there's never fraud when a Democrat wins? It says here, over the past 20 years, Democrats have on three separate occasions objected to the validity of electoral votes on the floor of Congress. It says Wednesday, January 6th will mark the first time Republicans choose to do so in the past two decades. So 3-1, Democrats line up. They line up even when they can't get a senator in their own party to side with them. They want to stop. They tried to tell the electors to not vote for Trump in 2016. I gave you a couple dozen headlines on that just the other day. It says here, since the passage of the Electoral Count Act of 1887, that's the one they had to button up a little bit just before they lost their majority. Yeah, let's change it and make sure it's just abundantly clear that the vice president can't kick it back to the states. Since the passage of that act in 1887, which provides a legal avenue for members of Congress to challenge electoral votes under the Constitution, Democrat lawmakers have objected to election outcomes on several occasions, including in 2001 and 2005, and as recently as 2017. The very last election before the one in 2020. You know, the one where Biden got 81 million votes. Why not just step back away from the weaponization of all these indictments and so forth and just look at Donald Trump? Everybody says, oh, he may go through the primaries, but then at the general, there's no way he beats Biden. There was a poll the other day. I think it was the same New York Times people that found Donald Trump way ahead of the Republican field. But they basically said, yep, Biden's doing great. I mean, he's crushing it, I guess. So just let it go to the polls. If he's so popular, well, you know where I'm going. They know. They know. They know that without cheating, they don't stand a chance. And isn't it amazing that right at the center of this indictment, you read it from start to finish, it was a good refresher for me, as I thought, oh, yeah, that there was fraud all throughout. Now, Smith, of course, is saying Donald Trump believed that. And because he said it, or he didn't believe it, but because he said it, you know, he created this atmosphere of mistrust. It says here, the certification challenge in 2005 was the only instance in recent years in which both a senator and a House member signed a formal objection to the electoral slate. Then Representative Stephanie Tubbs Jones, a Democrat, and then Senator Barbara Boxer, still alive, together challenged Bush's victory in Ohio on grounds of alleged voter irregularities. They were alleging irregularities. It says here the House and Senate adjourned and met separately for no more than 2 hours, as the Constitution stipulates, but ultimately neither Jones nor Boxer was able to gain enough votes from their respective colleagues to alter Ohio's electoral slate. To alter, listen to this, to alter Ohio's electoral slate. This is one of many instances where they've tried to alter the electoral slate. You've got these alternate electors in Michigan. The state there, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's the feds, but they're going after them. The state prosecutor, I believe it is. We've got to go after those electors because, you know, what was going on in their heart, their minds, they were creating an atmosphere of mistrust. Listen to this from, again, this is Trump's attorney. Well, actually, back up. I don't think we played number seven, play seven.
And the final ask that Mr. Trump made to Vice President Pence was simply pause the voting. There's nothing inherently unconstitutional or illegal about that. In fact, he had an opinion from a very well-known constitutional scholar that said that's fine, that that's legal. Mr. Trump is not a lawyer. He's a businessman.
His own attorney general and official said that that was not fine, that that was certainly illegal that he was asking. And they weren't just asking for a pause. He was asking to overturn the legitimate results. But John, let me ask you, because you're running point on this. Is Trump going to show up in person?
He was asked. He was asked. Let me ask you this.
Is Trump going to show up in person? For one thing to get back to you there, he's not just asking for a pause. Your client.
No. You have to look at his last. John, your client is on tape. You have to look at what he said at the Ellipse. Have you read the Ellipse speech?
John, you got to let me finish my point here.
No.
Your client, John,
when you look at the Ellipse speech,
that's
exactly what he said.
The Secretary of State of the state of Georgia. John, you got to let me finish my point here.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Letting you finish your point.
Absolutely.
But your
Go
client
ahead.
Is on tape with the former, with the Secretary of State from the state of Georgia, asking him to find him one more vote than he would need to win the state. That's not asking for a pause. He's asking for votes that he did not get in that election.
He was asking for the Secretary of State to identify votes that were not counted properly and factor that in. And by the way, that discussion took place with dozens of people on a phone call with lawyers involved, and no one was suggesting doing anything illegal. And no one during that call said, Mr. President, that's beyond the bounds. This is politics. This indictment is about pure politics.
It's politics. And they're trying to turn it into some kind of criminal behavior that he even had those discussions, like with the individuals representing the state of Georgia. All of these attorneys online having this discussion. One more from John Laro. This is clip 10.
So at the end, our defense is going to be focusing on the fact that what we have now is an administration that has criminalized the free speech and advocacy of a prior administration during the time that there is a political election going on. That's unprecedented. We've never seen that in the United States, in the history of the United States. So literally what we have is an attack and really an effort to not only criminalize but also censor free speech. Donald Trump had every right to advocate for his position. While he was president, he saw irregularities, he saw deficiencies in the election process. He raised those. He was being told under oath by people around the country that there were problems with the election. He also saw in real time that the rules were changing without the state legislatures weighing in. And ultimately, he had every right, in fact, a responsibility as a United States president to raise those issues. And now his advocacy is being criminalized.
He's exactly right there, that last point. Donald Trump at that time was the sitting president. He was in charge as the executive. He was the leader of the executive branch. And he was having discussions with lawyers, his attorneys. He's getting all these reports from across the country. Voter irregularities. Think about the stacks of affidavits. People signing an affidavit under the threat of perjury. If it's a false statement, and they say, yeah, we saw all kinds of fraud. So he's trying to do something about it. And these people, they want to criminalize his thoughts, some of his words. The fact remains, and we have to keep coming back to this, January 20th comes around after they fake the insurrection and all of that. After they ban him from Twitter, he's the president of the United States. Got banned from social media. And then come January 20th, he just walks out of the White House peacefully, gets onto the plane, and flies back home to Mar-a-Lago. And 2.5, this indictment, as flimsy as it is, why did it take 2.5 years? Why was it, I mean, leaving aside the timing as far as the revelations about the Biden crime family earlier this week, what about the timing just, you know, getting this close to his reelection campaign? It's just another way they're interfering with the election. But as I said at the top, they may have made a pretty big blunder. This is, again, John Lauro from yesterday, number two.
In 2020, Mr. Trump's campaign had a few weeks to gear up and present evidence, and it was very difficult. We now have the ability in this case to issue our own subpoenas, and we will relitigate every single issue in the 2020 election in the context of this litigation. It gives President Trump an opportunity that he has never had before, which is to have subpoena power since January 6th in a way that can be exercised in federal court.
What you're talking about?
He gets subpoena power now. So now, you know, Jack Smith may have opened a can of worms here. They get to relitigate the election fraud from 2020. They finally get to move it through courts. Courts looking at the evidence that they're learning through discovery. Jesse Waters made this same point on his show last night, clip three.
I don't think the Biden administration realizes what it's done here. It's going to give Donald Trump the opportunity to relitigate the 2020 election in federal court. This is what Donald Trump's been dying to do for the last 2.5 years. He's going to have subpoena power. He's going to cross-examine witnesses. He's going to put on his own witnesses. He's going to go out and prove or try to prove there was election fraud in Philly, Vegas, Arizona, Detroit, and the federal government is going to have to prove that it was clean in those deep blue counties. That's going to be a fun one to follow.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And added to that, it's going to be fun to follow it once the Supreme Court has to get involved. It's not going to be much of a challenge for Jack Smith to get a D.C. judge, particularly not this one that Obama appointed. She's going so hard after the January 6th protesters. She wants to see Trump in jail as well. And in a city where everyone on the jury votes blue, they'll get him on the first round. But how quickly will this move up to the Supreme Court level? You can see why they're so desperate to go after the Supreme Court, to pack the court, or to attack Clarence Thomas or whoever on the conservative side. Trump gets the chance to relitigate the election fraud story from 2020. And this time around, he has subpoena power. This time around, his team can cross-examine witnesses. Are they sure they want to go there? We've talked over the past year about how many of these efforts to get Trump have backfired, and have backfired spectacularly and quickly. I mean, listen to what they were saying right after the midterms. Remember that? Trump's finished. There was no red wave. He's gone. His political career is over. And it just took a couple of days before you started to look through some of the details and you realize, no, he's not. Well, now look where we are. He's the front runner by a mile. He's a mile in front of the pack. He's lapping the pack. And the Democrats know. They know that he's capable of winning if it's fair and square. So this is what we've come to expect from the communist left. If you want to read much, much more about this story, this is in America Under Attack. It's been in print since 2013. We recently expanded it. It's now in hardcover edition. So if you don't have your own copy, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy, 1-866-930-3024. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show. And of course, we'll see you tomorrow.